Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch is powered by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.
Hello and welcome to Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond. A podcast in which we'll be looking at ways to help students of English develop important skills for the 21st century. I'm your host, Louise Carlton-Gertsch. Several weeks ago, I was in London for the BET Show, the Global Education Technology Exhibition. Key themes were leadership, future, inclusion, well-being, skills and innovation. It was buzzing and provided an opportunity to listen to inspiring talks and new ideas, especially regarding current developments in the UK. This year there was, of course, a lot of talk about the changing times we're living in due to rapid developments in artificial intelligence. This was also one of the topics in a particularly thought-provoking panel discussion entitled Rethinking the Purpose of Education. In the industrial age, young people were educated to be ready to enter the workforce. Today, due to these new developments, the future of work as we know it is uncertain because we cannot foresee to what extent artificial intelligence will take over jobs and tasks. The question posed by the panel was whether today's educational goals should therefore embrace a broader vision, helping people to find their purpose in life through learning and redirecting our focus towards human flourishing. So what is human flourishing? The concept of human flourishing is, of course, nothing new. It goes back to Aristotle's reflections on eudaimonia, or flourishing, and the desire to understand and further it is common to other great intellectual traditions. In recent years, an increasing number of scholars across different disciplines have begun to do research into the full range of factors that contribute to human well-being. The importance of human flourishing is clearly laid out by the Health Equity and Policy Lab at the University of Pennsylvania. It states that human flourishing is important because it promotes the growth, development, and holistic well-being of individuals and populations. It serves as a moral basis for what it means to be a human being. Many people think that human flourishing is synonymous with happiness, but this definition is too narrow. As psychology professor Angela Lee Duckworth said when interviewed for the podcast series on human flourishing entitled Stories of Impact, flourishing goes beyond happiness. She explained, flourishing includes having a sense of meaning and purpose, which is not the same thing as having had an ice cream cone that day and a lot of fun. It can be having a few really bad days, but actually knowing that this is part of something that you've bought into, that you feel like your life is part of something larger than yourself. So how can we define flourishing? The Human Flourishing Programme at Harvard University says it's living in a state in which all aspects of a person's life are good. The programme was founded in 2016 by Professor Tyler J. Vanderweel and two other researchers. They said the aim was to address an important enduring question: how can human persons live flourishing lives? They went on to say that answering that question requires us to grapple with the complex ways that topics such as health, justice, love, character, family, work and religion all contribute to and intersect with well-being. Part of the programme's mission is to also further the well-being of the students at Harvard. According to Flynn Kratt, the programme's associate director, these students are high achievers, but they don't always stop to think about what their education is really for. The programme allows them to discover the scientific research and great religious and intellectual traditions concerning human flourishing, and at the same time enables them to develop character as well as a strong sense of purpose in life. What about human flourishing and education? Sir Ken Robinson was one of the world's leading thinkers concerning creativity and innovation in education. He believed that they were both key for human flourishing. But he criticised educational systems as he said they focused on teaching students to become good workers rather than creative thinkers. In his view, this would only change if we started treating children as unique individuals with an array of talents. He used a metaphor to illustrate this in his 2010 TED talk, Bring on the Learning Revolution, saying, "We have to recognise that human flourishing is not a mechanical process, it's an organic process. and you cannot predict the outcome of human development. All you can do, like a farmer, is create the conditions under which they'll begin to flourish. A couple of years later, he explained this further in the short video Flourishing for the Royal Society of Arts. In it, he talks about the importance of finding a purpose in our work or how we spend our time. He says that it's not only important because it resonates deeply with who we think we are, but that it's absolutely central for knowing who we are. He points out, in a way, if you don't know what you can do, you won't know what you might be. Human talent is often buried deep within us, and this means that many people have not yet discovered what theirs is. In order to help them do so, and thus to be able to flourish, we need to create education systems, organisations and communities that are built up around diversity rather than conformity to enable people to discover their unique talents and abilities. As he concludes, everything changes if a person finds their passion. 9 years later, at the inaugural Global Scientific Conference on Human Flourishing, Andrea Schleicher, Director of Education and Skills at the Organisation for Economic Development, gave an impassioned plea for reimagining education to support human flourishing. He said that globalisation and digitalisation have made the world more connected, yet at the same time the world has become much more complex and there's a growing disconnect in different areas, such as between economic potential and reality, the wealthy and the poor, and what's technologically possible and people's social needs. In today's world, education is no longer just about teaching students something, but it's about helping them to develop a reliable compass and to be able to build confidence and the necessary tools to navigate the world. He pointed out that in the age of artificial intelligence, we need to think about what makes us human, and this is why the idea of human flourishing is so important. He stressed the need to help students build social capital by supporting curiosity, developing compassion, courage, and our social and emotional resources. In addition, he talked about the need for developing a good understanding of how other people live in different cultures and different traditions, and how others think. He also underlined the importance of skills such as collaboration, because we're becoming increasingly interdependent, and people have to be able to work together. In addition, agency, awareness, connectedness, and the ability to listen have to be fostered. He also emphasised the need to give people ownership over their own learning, so when, where, and how they learn. Of course, the need to master content will always be important, but he insisted this should be done using human flourishing and not at its expense. Supporting student agency, encouraging a growth mindset, and the need for hope. In the introduction to his 2021 paper, Learning on Purpose, 10 Lessons in Placing Student Agency, Charles Leadbeater suggests that the school leaving exam should comprise one question, nothing more, as follows. Show how you can work with others to combine and use your knowledge to create change that will generate better outcomes for people and the planet while doing what you consider to be the right thing. He goes on to explain that the role of education is to help students exert some control and purpose over their lives. And as we can see, by answering this question, they'd be able to demonstrate to what extent they can do this. To be able to do so, they need to have a sense of agency, to have developed grit, to be flexible, to have empathy, and to be able to work collaboratively, as well as being able to apply what they've learned in the real world. Leadbeater says, they need to learn to thrive by drawing on what makes them fully human, their ability to connect, to make meaning together, and to act on fundamental moral purposes. Once they've left school, he says that students should be purposeful, reflective, and responsible agents who can actively work with others and decide on and shape their own future path. This is, of course, the essence of agency. We can exercise agency on an individual level, but also collaboratively, in teams and in smaller and larger communities to achieve common goals. Yet on all levels, it necessitates combining knowledge from different fields to understand problems and find solutions. So instead of waiting to be acted upon, it means that people can actively shape their own lives and futures. And as we know, this is going to be essential in the future when we're dealing with artificial intelligence. A key component of agency is a growth mindset, as opposed to a fixed one. The belief that intelligence and ability are not set in stone and can be developed over time. If a student has a growth mindset, they tend to put more energy into learning, embrace challenges, don't give up in the face of setbacks, learn from criticism, and find lessons in the success of others. Research by Carol Dweck and David Yeager in 2019 showed that students who have a growth mindset are more likely to be resilient and innovative as regards their learning strategies and have higher levels of motivation. In her 2014 TEDx talk, The Power of Believing That You Can Improve, Dweck provides a simple example of how a growth mindset can be cultivated in the classroom. At a high school in Chicago, if students didn't pass a particular course, instead of getting a fail grade, they were given the grade not yet. This showed them that they were on a learning curve and provided a way into the future. The words yet or not yet gave students greater confidence and also resulted in greater perseverance. And finally, I'd also like to briefly talk about the need for hope. In a 2002 article entitled Hope Theory, Rainbows in the Mind, psychologist and renowned hope researcher Charles Snyder writes, "In studying hope, so too have I observed the spectrum of human strength. This reminds me of the rainbow that's frequently used as a symbol of hope. A rainbow is a prism that sends shards of multicolored light in various directions. It lifts our spirits and makes us think of what is possible. Hope is the same, a personal rainbow of the mind." Snyder and his colleagues developed hope theory based around the following three elements. Goals. Our actions are driven by goals. Pathways thinking. These are the routes we take to achieve our goals. And agency thinking. So the belief that we can cause change and achieve these goals. In an article for the Washington Post this year, writer Amandli Ripley explains that she believes hope is necessary for human flourishing. And I couldn't agree more. Without hope, we're blocked and can feel powerless. Ripley talks about her disillusionment with traditional news reporting due to its lack of three key elements: hope, agency, and dignity. As she points out, it's easy to feel helpless when we read devastating stories and reports about events that seem beyond our control. Yet, by providing stories where people find agency and act to create change, we can restore hope. She admits that the word hope sounds gauzy and fey, like rainbows and sunsets. It feels like a gateway drug to delusion and denial. But she goes on to say that rainbows and sunsets are phenomena that can be explained, and hope is tangible too. She describes it as being more similar to a muscle than an emotion, using an equation to make it more tangible. An equation that's based on Snyder's three elements. Hope equals goals plus roadmap plus willpower. And according to research, hope can also be taught. She quotes clinical psychologist Matthew Gallagher, who studies hope. He says, "Hope is malleable. It's not a static thing like how tall you are. It can change." Interestingly, but perhaps not unsurprisingly, people who have stronger hope skills score better on assessments of happiness, purpose, and self-esteem, and tend to do better at school, sports, and work. How can we bring some of these ideas into the English classroom? In previous episodes, I've talked about ways of encouraging creativity and creative thinking, of how we can develop grit and agency, as well as how to nurture curiosity. So now I'd like to share a few ideas on hope. Today, in light of all of the devastating stories we hear about in the news, it's important that we also sometimes focus on positive examples of change and action, no matter how small, rather than just on the problem. This could mean looking at what individuals and young people in particular have achieved to give students a sense of agency. As Catherine Hayhoe wrote in an article for the New York Times this year, "Fear is useful to wake us up and make us pay attention. But if we don't know what to do, it paralyzes us." One way to inspire action and build collective agency is by getting students to think about a small change they could make regarding a specific issue, such as maybe avoiding waste, energy efficiency, sustainability, either at their school or in their local community. By looking collectively in small groups at what could be done, planning the necessary steps, and actually putting this into practice, students will be able to see that small actions can also make a difference, which in turn will make them feel more empowered. I recently read an article on Edutopia about a US high school teacher who presented her students with an activity to encourage them to act on their dreams. The students first watched Ted Urban's insightful and humorous talk, Inside the Mind of a Major Procrastinator. In it, Urban encourages his audience to think about the real reasons why they're putting things off. The teacher then got her students to discuss why someone might not achieve their goals if they didn't structure them. Following this, each student brainstormed 12 hopes for their future and chose one that they were going to focus on. They then outlined a plan on how they were going to reach it, including deadlines and research that might need to be undertaken. Afterwards, they presented their ideas to classmates so that someone would hold them accountable. To get students to become more hopeful, Denise Larson, director of Hope Studies Central, suggested getting students to answer the prompt, "Today I hope," as often as possible. Interestingly, she said that framing the question as a hope instead of a goal was key for students because there's a simple but powerful shift in the language when we move from goals to hope. It's possible to fail at a goal, but you can't fail at a hope. Start with hope first. The changes in today's world are happening at such an incredible pace that we can't predict the future with any great certainty. This means that it's becoming increasingly difficult to prepare students for many of the jobs ahead. Instead, we have to help them to develop the skills and attitudes that will enable them to deal with the uncertainties that they'll face. We need to help them prepare for lifelong learning and to find ways to flourish. And we need to give them hope. As Michelle Obama said during a keynote address at the Young African Women Leaders Forum in 2011, "You may not always have a comfortable life, and you will not always be able to solve all of the world's problems at once. But don't ever underestimate the importance you can have. Because history has shown us that courage can be contagious, and hope can take on a life of its own." Thanks for listening.
Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond, by Louise Carlton-Gerch, was brought to you by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.